Welcome to the Bring Back the Poetry podcast. My name is Jason Tomlinson. Thank you so much for joining me. I am very excited to wrap up the final segment of Passion to Profession. We started this back with Kevin Lawson with his music school and his music studio. Then we moved on to Justin Swanson with his karate school and his dojo. And then we moved on to Wayne Brzezinka, and then we moved on to Blue Mother Tupelo, and finally, we're going to finish out on a high note, on a light note, on a funny note, with Jimmy Travis, humorist Jimmy Travis. And if you didn't get a chance to listen to any one of this month's podcasts, I hope that you will go back and pick up the one that you wanted to. All five different features have very different stories to tell, but the common thread among them all is that their passion is their profession, meaning they love their work, and what they do every day is something that I admire immensely, and I might be at that level myself someday, who knows, or you might be too, who knows. If you have any questions that you want me to kick back and ask some of those folks, I'd be more than happy to. You can leave a comment on my bringbackthepoetry.com, or you can shoot me an email, spokenwordsaint@gmail.com is where you can find me anytime, night or day. Today, like I said, we're going to wrap up with a feature about Jimmy Travis. He has been making people laugh for over 40 years. Since the early 70s, and the poem that I have written in tribute to him is called Be You, and it's all about being yourself, which Jimmy does very well, and you will learn that very well if you listen to the interview following this poem. Here it is, Be You. It's an age-old saying, but no less true. Be yourself. There's only one you. Critics will give you all sorts of advice, but don't pay him no mind. Don't even think twice if they're suggesting that you change or depart from the source of your creativity, your heart. That's you. And really, who are they? Don't even worry about the things they say. There's only one to listen to. Only one can affirm or adjust what you do. And when he speaks, even if you doubt it, his consistency will be all about it and boomerang back until you understand that he loves you. And in his hand, you will find identity and truth for you to be true. He's the means and the ends for you to be you. Thank you so much for listening. Let's go ahead and pull up that interview. Here we go. Welcome to the Bring Back the Poetry podcast. My name is Jason Tomlinson. Thank you so much for joining us. Did you catch that pronoun? I'm not by myself. I am with Jimmy Travis. Hey, Jimmy.
What's up, brother? Good to see you.
Thank you. Jimmy is a comedian / musician. He's a nut, evidently.
More nut than either of the other two.
He has been traveling all over the United States and making people crack up for a long, long time. Jimmy, walk us through your short history, your long history as a comedian.
I've got long history. I don't even call myself a comedian. I don't know what I am.
Entertainer?
Yeah, I'm maybe a humorist or something.
I like humorists a lot better.
Comedian has got such a strange attachment now that I'm more of a humorist because I write songs, funny songs, mm-hmm. and stuff to go in my act, and then I'm more of a storyteller, and
I like that,
and it's just kind of evolved. I came up here and went to work at Opryland.
Okay.
Years and years ago.
Right, in the 80s and 90s?
Yeah, earlier than that.
Nice.
Second or third year it was open, like 74 or something.
So you came up here to the Nashville area. We're
from Florida.
From Florida, okay.
Yeah, near Gainesville.
Okay.
And I met my wife. She was in the same show.
Cool.
And then I wanted to be a songwriter, so I was writing songs and trying to, you know, trying to get that going. And I would support myself playing restaurants and clubs. But back then, I was, you know, there was every hotel had a live band.
Right.
Almost all restaurants either had a piano player. I mean, nice, but had a piano player, or they had a guitar, and you could make a living doing that. And I was counting the other day, sitting here, there were like 23 places around town that I gigged at that aren't even in business anymore. I mean, wow. You know. So that's how I started. Then
So back then, was that your solo income back
then?
That
was it, yeah.
Okay.
That was it.
So
this is all I've ever done.
This is
43 years.
Oh,
yeah.
My goodness.
43 years. And it's been quite a journey, and I'm amazed that, you know, I'm still doing it. But I would do that, and then a buddy of mine was playing at Boots Randolph, the great saxophone player, wonderful, had all these big hits, and he traveled with Chet Atkins and Floyd Kramer, and they did the festival music. Boots had a dinner theater down in Printer's Alley, and this guy had played in there in a separate little room there, and so.
And what year are we talking about?
We're talking 78, maybe.
Okay.
Tourists all over Nashville,
sure.
Everywhere. I mean, buses galore. Totally different scene now.
Very different.
Than then. So I would work Opryland, you know, during the day and then go in there at night. I went in there for 2 days and stayed 17 years. Not every night, but that was like my home base.
Homestay, right?
Yeah,
there.
And it was a room where they would bring people in. It seated about 150 people, and they actually used it for a holding room before they would... Boots would do two shows.
Sure.
And so he really didn't know what to do with the room, so I didn't really have an act, but I needed the job because I basically just sat on a stool before and told stories, and it was more about music, you know?
Yeah.
And then I started developing this, whatever this is that I do, and it became a listening room, and now we had basically two clubs in one. So that was my home base. And in Boots, as I began to do some TV and stuff, I started doing the National Network and different things. I was on there once a month.
I bet we can find you on YouTube.
Yeah, you can find me. I don't even put that stuff out. I don't know. And from there, I started opening for people. People, you know, back in those days, headliners would play Vegas 2 weeks and Reno 2 weeks, Tahoe, and they always used an open act. So there was, I went out with the Judds and Loretta Lynn and Conway Twitty and Gregory Hines, remember the tap dancer, Melissa Manchester. So I did that for like 3 or 4 years. That was great. And my goal was to make a living being, you know, on my own.
Right.
As opposed to having to work for somebody.
Right.
And that slowly came about. So, you know, and that's happening. And probably the biggest thing, I was playing in a golf tournament. You get invited to these golf tournaments and you play golf and then entertain.
Sure.
And you meet all these people. And this guy came up to me after the golf tournament and he said, "I'm really interested in you." And he was from New York. His name was Jerry Purcell.
Jerry
and he was managing a gentleman named Eddie Arnold at the time.
Okay.
And Jerry had started Mary Tyler Moore, and he had Jay Leno and Cher and a lot of different.
Wow.
He was a heavy agent at one time. He was older in life then, but still very successful.
Yeah.
And so he came to see me at Boots's, and I had a horrible night. I just couldn't, you know, because I really didn't have an act. I just, you know, would get up there and go with the flow. Sometimes the flow doesn't flow. And he, you know, but basically he said, you know, that was the worst thing I've ever seen. And he grilled me for like 45 minutes. And normally I would have said, well, you know, you can take a flying leap, you know. But something told me just that. And he was right. And he said, but you've got something. People like you on stage. He said, and that's the most important thing.
Right.
You're never going to be the funniest guy. You're never going to be the best singer. You're never going to win every fight. But people like you, and that is what I've that's why I'm still doing it.
Night you could have shut it down.
I could have shut it down, and I wanted to. Trust me, I wanted to tell this guy, you know, but he was right, and so that's when I made the change from music into still do the music into trying to become more of a humorist and then I was watching TV. I spent a lot of quality time with myself. sick of myself. And I was watching late at night, and I don't even know who this guy was. Some black entertainer.
Sure.
And he was talking. He said, you know what? He said, it took me a long time doing this. He said, but, you know, one day I woke up and I realized, he said, you know, I can go in a church and entertain. I can go in a bar and entertain. I can go in a casino and entertain. I can go in a theater and entertain. And I don't have to change who I am. He said, I knew right then that I had something, the material that I was doing and the approach that I was taking, that would work. And that resonated with me. And I'd always thought that, but without, you know what I'm saying? Without
not
having
consciously.
Not
yeah.
consciously. So that really resonated.
Yeah.
And it's just been a journey. And one thing I think has helped me, I've always stayed current with what's happening in the world, but sure. also what's happening with me.
Yeah.
I'm 64 years old, soon to be 65. I'm a grandfather.
Sure.
I'm not talking about teenage daughters. I got buddies that are still doing the same act they did 20 years ago.
Oh, man.
And I want to go, man, you know what? They're not buying this. So I'm talking about stuff that, and I get the chance to play for some young people, you know, some teenagers and high schoolers and different, not in school, but they come to the shows sometimes. And it's really... it's thrilling for me to be able to entertain them.
Still,
you know,
relate.
Still relate. And I think you do it by being real, and you do it by being who you are and whatever it is that you're trying to impart or whatever. You know, I want them to have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to, when they leave there, it's like Seinfeld, the show within a show. This is a show that's not a show. It's just, I want them to leave an hour and a half later and go, what in the world was that? But I don't know, but I'll go back.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I never finish a song. You know? I'll be in the middle of something. If something happens, I'm off on just on something. Drives my wife nuts, but it's what's worked for me.
Yeah. Have you ever encountered any kind of pressure to be edgier or more inappropriate?
You know, I don't know. I think you can talk about topics without being offensive.
Right.
I've heard Doug, our pastor, talk about things, but he does it in an upfront way.
Yeah.
And some people are going to get offended.
Yeah.
But
it's still appropriate.
It's still appropriate. Yeah. And I talk about things, you know, and we make fun, you know. But it's not, there are ways to talk about the same subject that you would go, oh, that's just, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just an approach.
Yeah.
Anymore in humor and comedy, it's, there's no middle ground.
No.
It's like Christianity and life, you know. It used to be pretty easy to walk the fence and blend in with every, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I was really good at that. I need to quit.
No, you're good.
But now you either are or you aren't. And that's pretty much that way in entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just think of somebody. You know, we were flipping last night. These two girls were on a comedy channel flipping through. And I mean, we're 10 seconds into it. And we look at each other and go,
what in the world?
What's going on?
Yeah.
But there's people that are buying into that. And I'm not knocking. It's not my thing. But, you know, so it's, I've never really felt.
Yeah.
You know what? It's just, I'll tell you a story. If you got two minutes.
I am ready.
I've had some freaky things happen to me.
Okay.
When I was working down at Boots's, and my manager was saying, man, you need to put the guitar down. It's stand-ups where it's at. You put the guitar down.
Huh.
Put the guitar down, and you need to be doing, you know, current events, and you know, that's how you're going to get on the Tonight Show. That's how you're going to get the guitar. It's just not going to work, you know. And I was really conflicted because I love the music and I love the, it's just more, it's like, you know, playing golf with less clubs. You know, I wanted to, but I was really frustrated. And I was driving home one night from Boots. It's about 2:00 in the morning. I'm doing one of these shout out prayers to God, you know, God,
okay.
I need some direction here.
Yeah.
I don't care what it is, but make it so obvious and clear that not even I can screw this up. You know? And whenever you pray like that, I've never had him not answer.
Nice.
I mean, when you're honest and really pleading. I'm right in the middle. I said, I just need to know what to do. Do I put this guitar down? What do I do? I'm at my wit's end. And I'm coming on 65 North there.
Yeah.
No one else on the interstate at that time of night. And right at the Trinity Lane exit there.
Okay, yeah.
This BMW comes buzzing by me and just cuts right in front of me from the second leg to take that exit. And its license plate said JUSBU. Just be you.
Just be you.
And off it went.
You can't make this stuff up.
No. You tell your wife that, she thinks you're nuts. So I told her, she said, you're scaring me. You're scaring me. And so that was a big wake-up call. And then one night down there, I wouldn't get anywhere. I was just in a rut. You know, we all go, as artists, we go through ruts.
Yeah.
And, you know, and there's the world's full of talented people that nobody will ever see. And right. I don't know why. No rhyme or reason. And I was really frustrated. And I was another one of those, I just need to know if I'm doing the right thing. Yeah. I've got 12, 13, 14, 15 years into this.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, I'm surviving. I'm paying the bills. But I need to know, am I doing the right thing?
Yeah.
So after the show down at the club one night, the spiral staircase that would come up, and I'm standing there by the staircase, and this guy walked up, and he walked by me. He was nice dressed, had a suit and tie on. He didn't say anything. You know, people are milling out after the show. I'm talking to some of them, and he goes out the front door, and about 2 minutes later, he turns around and comes in and walks up to me and sticks his hand out. He says, I just want you to know you're doing the right thing. Hmm. Turned around, and off he walked. Now, I guess I'm so hard-headed that I have to be knocked over the head with it. But those things and a few things more are why I don't worry about being edgy.
Yeah.
And worry about, I pray, send me the dates you want me to have.
Yeah.
And and I'm not doing anything special. I'm just bringing hopefully a little mirth, a little laughter.
Yeah.
Into people's lives. Everybody has a gift.
Yeah.
Everybody has a gift of something special within them. Some people never find it. Some people don't even know they have it. Some people wouldn't know where to look for it. It's hard. Steve Harvey, I saw him one time. I really like Steve Harvey. I think he's probably a really good guy. He said, two greatest days of your life are when you're born and when you figure out what you're here for.
Mm.
And that helps. And also it helps to know, I think everybody's got a gift and everybody's broken. Mm. We all got problems. We used to have horses. There's a saying, there's a hole in every horse, meaning there's something wrong with every horse. There's something wrong with every person.
And
that's what I like about Doug. That's what I like about Kevin. That's what I like about a lot of the people that go to our church.
Yeah.
They're up there. They're reaching people, and somehow they have the personality and they have the ability to cut through all of this
nonsense,
and go straight to the real stuff. Now, everybody may not like it. I realize that, and that hurts, but that's just the way it is. But that's kind of where it's at. You just get real with it, and the ones that'll hear will hear, and those that won't will go someplace else.
Sure, sure.
I don't know.
The remarkable thing that I'm hearing from you, I have heard it from Blue Mother Tupelo.
I love that name. I've been to Tupelo many times. In fact, I'm booked in Tupelo May the 3rd of 2016, if I live that long. I'll look for Blue Mother down there.
You should. And I heard it from Wayne Brzezinka. And it's this theme, this idea that the stuff that nobody asks you to do, but it's the stuff that God puts in you, this just be you, like the license plate said. And the thing that you just said, everybody has it, and not everybody figures out what it is.
I didn't know I had it. Yeah. I knew I had something, but you don't know. And it's not like you can, I don't know. I don't know when it changed and when my attitude toward it changed. It has to do with your spiritual walk too, I'm sure. You know, the more you're into that, the more that becomes real, then the more I don't know, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is, you know, my wife and I wrote, we wrote musicals, children's musicals.
I have like, seen we like one of 13 them.
13 of those things. Yeah. Where did that come from? I mean, I don't, she would write the dialogue, and I would write the songs. I don't know one note from another, but I can hum them.
Sure.
And, you know, people would write them down into songs. Well, Kevin, you know, they just, how could I take any credit?
Parabalooza.
Parabalooza. Yeah. They just, Parabalooza. Yeah. I remember. The stuff just, it just, it would just come, you know.
Yeah.
It would just come, and that's, I don't know. I don't know. I'm very lucky.
Now, as a professional, I'm always curious, do you do all your own booking, or are you with a management?
No, I've got, it's a combination.
Okay.
I've had several agents for corporate stuff. I used to do a ton of it. There's not a ton of it to do anymore.
Right.
Conventions, they're still good conventions, but businesses are, joke telling is way down the list on things companies have to have.
Sure.
I used to do like three a week. I'd be on a plane flying somewhere. I probably do three a month now.
Wow.
And there are agents for that.
Yeah.
Speakers bureaus, and then I have an agent down in Florida that books the stuff, and then an agent in Arizona that books. Yeah, there's several.
Sure.
I've only been with two management companies my whole life. One was with the Mr. Purcell in New York. The other was with Andy Williams' brother.
Okay.
Don Williams.
Oh, wow.
Great guys.
Yeah.
So, and then it just word of mouth, and it just kind of
comes,
you know.
Yeah. Thinking about your history in Music City, I mean, you've seen it all.
I got here at the greatest time.
You really did.
I got here at the greatest time. You could literally walk in. We should just walk in Marty Robbins' office and have coffee.
Wow.
You know, just sit. You could walk in the front door and pitch songs. Gosh, I remember being over at the Monument Records, Roy Orbison walk. You know, it was a different day and age, and the music was different. The life, it was just a And the tourism was different. Nashville's a tourist town now, but it's a tourist town because of professional sports and big venue things. But it used to be when Opryland was here, and there were buses. Gosh, I mean, there'd be 200 buses in town. Mm-hmm. But that's just part of the evolution, and the music has certainly changed.
Mm-hmm.
It's good, but I have to be honest with you, I don't listen to much music anymore.
Yeah.
I listen to it, but I listen to
what you want.
Yeah, I listen to. I love Alison Krauss. I love. It's not stuff you're gonna click on the radio and hear.
I bet you would love Blue Mother Tupelo.
I'm sure I would. just the name, I guarantee you, I would love them. I had a group for the year. The name of my group was the Florida Mountain Boys.
The Florida Mountain Boys.
Yeah.
The irony is not wasted.
And people would go. Some people go, well, there are no mountains in Florida. I would go, well, think about it.
Yeah. I will be performing soon at the summit of Mount Juliet.
The summit of Mount Juliet, yeah. I did a thing out in Arizona, and we hike, you know, when we go, and it was the Tonto National Forest. Well, there's not a tree anywhere. It's all these barren mountains of rock and sage.
Right.
Yeah, that was my opening line. I went to they call it a national forest when there's not a tree to be seen.
That's great. Going back to Music City, when Opryland shut down in 1996, how did that affect your career? How did that affect you as an artist?
It didn't affect me that much. That didn't affect me that much because I had left Opryland. I was only there 2 years.
Okay.
So I was out on my own. What it affected was, it affected the dinner theater I was working because we were primarily tourist and business people being clients in there. So that really hurt, and you saw the business go down. What really affected me the most was when the Nashville Network closed.
What year was that?
I don't know.
Was it the 90s?
No, it was a little bit later.
Okay.
Because the people that, you know, bought Opryland bought, you know who they are, and then sold it off.
Yeah.
But when I didn't realize the power of that network, you know, because back then there weren't that many cable networks. Mm-hmm. And I mean, every time after I would do the show, and I'm not I'm a working guy, you know.
Sure.
I'd be going through an airport and somebody would go, hey, I saw you on Nashville Now.
Nice.
The other night. There were over a million people watching it. I didn't realize at the time,
yeah,
the exposure that I was getting, wow, and what it meant to, you know, to be able to get on that program. If I was working for Toyota or whoever, and then, you know, Ralph would say, "Where are you going next?" Well, I'm going to Orlando to do the, you know, Southeast Toyota.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, here's a,
yeah,
here's a nice Toyota jacket for you, you know.
Cool.
So when that closed, and it hurt a lot of people.
Yeah.
It hurt country music. It hurt. It hurt.
When the Nashville Network.
The Nashville Network. Wow. When they closed that up, because that was, there were a couple shows on there, you know, Crook and Chase and,
yeah,
Nashville Now and Music City Tonight or whatever.
Yeah.
It was like the Tonight Show for,
right,
for rural America.
Right.
And when that left, it left a huge void that's never been filled.
Wow. That's something that nobody's talking about anymore.
I don't think they will.
Yeah.
It's because it's like corporate conventions and stuff, you know, that when the economy was really, really bad, they were on, companies make money. They still make, but they make money by tightening the bottom line.
Hmm.
And you go through a 10-year period where they realize, well, wait a minute, we don't have to spend all this money to bring in, you know, let's give our people a nice goodie bag or something. And so it's just a different mindset. I don't think we'll see another we have RFD, that the network, it's doing okay, but it's not near what the Nashville Network was. And I don't know that there's an audience for it anymore.
Yeah.
I really don't.
Can you kind of compare the Nashville Network to the Grand Ole Opry? Was it of that magnitude?
Oh yeah, it was all tied together.
Yeah,
they owned it all.
Yeah, the Grand Ole. I mean,
they owned the Opry, they owned the Opryland Hotel, they owned the General Jackson, they owned Opryland, they owned the National Network. It all fit together like a glove.
Yeah.
It was wonderful.
Huge.
Huge. It was a huge, huge, huge deal.
Yeah.
And there, of course, there's more people that know a lot more about it than I do.
Sure.
I was just an outsider.
Yeah.
Small insider from doing the network and doing the park and doing conventions out there, but
yeah,
excuse me, but I know the impact that it had.
Yeah, wow,
that was huge.
That's really interesting. So, you've been at this, would you say 43 years?
Let's see, I started in 73 when I moved up here. I actually played when I was in school a little bit, so that's, I don't know,
yeah, maybe a little 40, bit
40 something years.
I like that.
I'm getting tired though. I'm a little picky now too,
yeah, and you can afford to be.
I can't afford to be.
That's
I cannot. You know, it's amazing. I cannot believe that how well we've done.
Yeah.
Doing what?
Yeah.
We do.
Now, being married to Gail. Now, you've been at this. How long have you been married? 38 years.
Yeah.
Being married to Gail has. I mean, I assume that has enhanced your career. You're talking about writing plays with her?
Yeah, it's helped because she's kept me grounded.
Yeah.
She's kept me grounded, and she, because I got close about 3 times. I mean, I got really close to busting through the wall.
Wow.
And with different things, you know, you know, TV show or whatever, a sitcom or something, you know, you get there and you put in all this time and you get there and then something happens.
Yeah.
And looking back, it's probably a good thing.
That
you didn't
get your big break.
Yeah, probably. I would have probably screwed up.
Wow.
Maybe I wouldn't have, but I don't know. I don't worry about that.
Yeah.
But she's good. Gail is good because, and here's something that's good about Gail, likes to go.
Yeah.
See, she likes to go.
Yeah.
So if we're getting ready to do, we spend more time on ships now because about 100 days a year, maybe.
That doesn't hurt.
No, but it's really nice. It's like the Ritz-Carlton at sea, and I don't have to work that much, and she has to work 9.
Yeah.
So we've been to 100 countries.
Wow.
Doing this. You know, one year we went from Antarctica to the North Pole.
Just making people laugh.
Not on one cruise, but I mean that we went on a trip down there, then one up. Yeah, just doing my thing. And, you know, it's amazing to me that people of different nationalities, now if they can't speak a little English, they're not going to get anything, but I know they don't know what I'm talking about half the time.
But there's still
these agents that will come up and they will go, you funny, you know, we enjoyed, and I go, you know, yeah.
There's something about the language of humor that just comes through.
We got on the ship one Sunday, we were on the ship and we were on the elevator, and we were going up to eat breakfast up on deck 11 or something. And these two Japanese ladies got on and spoke no English, and I just nodded. And I was, the door shut, and I'm a whistler and a hummer. It drives people nuts. And a drummer. I'm ADD to the max.
Sure.
Oh, gee, just eating up with it. And so I'm humming, and I didn't realize what I was humming. And I was just, when shout to the Lord, I was just humming. And before I know it, these little Japanese, two Japanese ladies, they start singing it.
That's
in Japanese.
Stop.
They start singing it in Japanese.
Shout to the Lord in Japanese.
In Japanese. Oh, and we're singing it in English. And the door opens about, you know, and they get off and nod, and we get off. And
man.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. Just crazy stuff, you know? Yeah.
That's
it's been an amazing journey.
Yeah. So what's next?
I don't know. You know, I'm you never know when something's going to be dumped in your lap. I met a guy. He's the greatest sports photographer that's ever lived. His name is Neil Leifer.
Nice.
He's the most celebrated. Google him, Neil Leifer.
He'll come right up.
He's taken more photographs of Muhammad Ali.
Okay.
He's got the Vince Lombardi on Jerry Kramer's shoulders. That's his secretariat coming down the rail at the Belmont. Wow. Castro, Gorbachev, the Pope. I mean, this guy has... Well, anyway, I met him. And he and I became, you know, acquaintances. He was a lecturer on the ship.
Okay.
And he was doing... So we were having dinner one night, and he's... And he says, I said, what are you doing? Well, I'm doing a documentary for ESPN, a 30 for 30 series.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, do you ever have music in them? He goes, well, no, I never have. And so basically, he told me what it was. And I said, well, let me see if I can come up with something.
Yeah.
And I pitched it to him, and he liked it. So I got the theme song on that was just aired right before the Super Bowl.
Stop. Yeah. That's incredible.
Yeah, and I went up to New York, and we recorded it up there, which was an experience.
And you're 64. And just boom, out there on ESPN.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I had it.
It never stops.
It never, you can't stop. But in the way I got him, and I don't, because I'm, you know, I'm always.
Yeah.
I can't help it. I'm always just.
Creating.
It just comes out.
Yeah.
I can't sit down and go, I think I'll create.
Right.
It just comes out.
Right.
And so he was walking.
There's no stop
button. I was doing a rehearsal with the band on the ship, because he used the band on the ship for the show.
Yeah.
And he walked in the showroom, and I just started singing, you know, when I grow up, I want to be just like Neil Leifer. When I grow up, I want to be just like him. I want to walk down the street, and everybody I meet, I want to make him my best friend, you know, something like that.
That's good.
And he laughed, and he said, when did you write that? I said, about 10 seconds ago. And that's where, you know, he approached me. He said, that thing you wrote, I said, yeah. He said, could you write? I said, I could try. And that's how it came about.
Wow. Yeah. Jimmy Travis, y'all, if you can find him, that's great. I will help you. If he's local, you will know about it from me. And thank you.
I'll be in Tupelo May the 3rd with Blue. See, I'm going to be looking for Blue Mama.
Blue Mama. Blue Mama Tupelo.
Blue Mama.
Thank you so much,
Jimmy.
We'll see you guys.
See you on a few Sundays.